אקריא לפניכם את מגילת היסוד של מדינת ישראל, אשר אושרה בקריאה ראשונה על ידי מועצת העם.
The voice you've just heard is Ben-Gurion's, the primary national founder of the State of Israel and the first Prime Minister of Israel on the 14th of May 1948, when he declared the independence of Israel. This important event was preceded by long years of work, struggle, and the suffering of several people devoted to Zionism. The roots of the Zionist movement must be sought in Eastern Europe and in Hungary, the birthplace of the person who did the most for the establishment of the independent Israeli state, says Mark Takaj, young scholar of Jewish studies. This person, Theodor Herzl, is still held in great respect and admiration in one country. He is the founder of Zionism and honored with the title of the Father of Israel. Herzl was not the originator of the idea of Zionism, but he extended it into an international movement. But who was this passionate and tireless person whose portrait we can find in every office, state building, and school around Israel? Moreover, what is Zionism, the movement that led to the creation of the State of Israel?
Zionism has several different definitions depending on the historical context and depending on who you speak to, but the most popular definition would be the Herzlian definition, which is the moving of the Jewish people to then Palestine and now Israel.
Zionism roots in Eastern Europe because of the historical and cultural reason. Most of the Jews lived in Eastern Europe. They not only had their own quarters in the cities, but their own language too. But at the same time, during the 19th century, they started to assimilate into the mainland in order to combat antisemitism by changing their religious customs or even converting to Christianity. Unfortunately, in most cases, this did not change the prejudice against them. There are tons of anecdotes and jokes from this time that always have the same punchline, which basically is that the Jew has this some kind of inherent Jewishness inside of him or her, a stigma that even though if they convert to Christianity, will still stay there. When nationalist movements began to gain strength across Europe in the 19th century and became a political force, some of the Jews' leaders started to use the nationalistic idea on a bigger scale and started to speak about the establishment of an independent Jewish state. Theodor Herzl, this talented young Jewish law student and journalist, saw the hopeless fight against antisemitism, started to believe that the Jews should establish their own independent state rather than trying unsuccessfully to assimilate into society. Born into a Neolog Jewish family in Budapest in 1860, he was the second child of Jeanette and Jacob Herzl, who were German-speaking assimilated Jews. He has Hungarian roots, but he never considered himself as a Hungarian. In fact, he considered himself a German until he met Jewish nationalism.
His father was a very successful businessman, so they were not only a large part of the community, but they also had power and influence and money. So this definitely rubbed off on the young Herzl, who, even when he was young, knew he was destined to great things. He just didn't know in what way. He studied law, but that was only out of basically like just a custom. He was always looking for literature as a way of channeling his great potential, but he wasn't a very successful writer. He wrote several plays that do not remain in cultural memory. They were mostly light comedies that had nothing to do with Judaism. And later on, he became a journalist.
He had a sister, Pauline, a year older than him. She died at the age of 18 in typhus. After her death, the family moved to Vienna when Herzog studied law. As a young law student, Herzog became a member of the German nationalist Burschenschaft fraternity, Albia, which had the motto Ehre, Freiheit, Vaterland, honor, freedom, fatherland. He later resigned in the protest of the organization's anti-Semitism. As a journalist, he was commissioned to go to France and be the French correspondent of the newspaper Neue Freie Presse.
And he was in France during the Dreyfus Affair, which might be the most important point in his journey towards his Zionistic, new Zionist idea. He writes throughout the whole trial, and this is where Herzl, to paraphrase Simone de Beauvoir, he wasn't born Jewish, he rather became Jewish. He never thought of himself as a Jew. He thought of himself as a German. But then he sees a person who first and foremost thinks of himself as a Frenchman who fights for the French nation, French people, and then is accused of treason and gets yelled death to the Jews by the people he was fighting for and that he thought of as a community for himself. So there Herzl realizes that assimilation is not the right way to combat anti-Semitism because they will always remain Jews. And this, combined with the anti-Semitism that he faces when he's in the German nationalist fraternity, compels him to write his great treatise of the Jewish state.
In June 1895, he wrote in his diary, "In Paris, as I have said, I achieved a freed attitude toward anti-Semitism. Above all, I recognize the emptiness and futility of trying to combat anti-Semitism." Herzl's editor at Neue Freie Presse refused any publication of his Zionist political activities. Around this time, Herzl started writing pamphlets about a Jewish state. Herzl claimed that these pamphlets resulted in the establishment of the Zionist movement, and they did play a large role in the movement's rise and success. Beginning in late 1895, Herzl wrote Der Judenstaat, The State of the Jews, which was published February 1896 to immediate acclaim and a controversy. The book argued that the Jewish people should leave Europe for Palestine, their historic homeland. But the fact that the Jewish state should be in Palestine was not as obvious as it is today. Palestine was only one, but of course the best favored one, of several possibilities where Zionists envisioned the future Israel. Of course, the ancient Holy Land of the Jews was the most coveted and most supported idea, but the choice was not so simple.
There were several other options where the Jews could go, and during history there were all kinds of new options popping up left and right. It's very interesting that the last Zionist Congress that Theodor Herzl took part in was mostly about if they would accept the British government's offer of taking Uganda as the Jewish homeland. Herzl maintained in his speech that this wouldn't be a substitute for Palestine, but just as a placeholder until they can move to Palestine. So there was this great debate about if they should go to Uganda or not. And then they decided by a small margin of votes that they would consider the offer and go to Uganda to investigate. So a whole delegation of Jews went to Uganda, and they saw that there were some fertile lands and fertile grounds there, but they got scared of the lions. This is not necessarily a joke. In their speech, they state that there are animals there who could be dangerous to the Jewish people, for example, lions and all kinds of predators. They respectfully declined the offer, which made Herzl very heartbroken because he died several years later and he couldn't see his dream come to fruition, not even in a small sense. So there was this other idea of putting the Jews into Alaska, There's this very famous American writer called Michael Hobon who writes these series of books in a alternative historical setting where Jews actually moved to Alaska. It's very interesting. These are crime novels about a Jewish criminal investigator trying to solve crimes in this alternative historical state. There was this other idea of going to parts of Australia. There was another idea of getting an island in Japan, funnily enough. And there was this other idea by the Germans, the Nazis during the Second World War, that after they would seize the British colonies, they would give Madagascar to the Jewish people.
Herzl began to energetically promote his idea, continually attracting supporters, Jewish and non-Jewish. Supporters of existing Zionist movement, such as the Hababai Zion, immediately allied themselves with him, but he also encountered bitter opposition from members of the Orthodox community and those seeking to integrate in non-Jewish society. In 1897, at considerable personal expense, he founded the Zionist newspaper Die Welt in Vienna, Austria-Hungary, and planned the first Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland. He was elected president of the Congress, a position he held until his death in 1904. And in 1898, he began a series of diplomatic initiatives to build support for a Jewish country.
The first Zionist Congress gathers 200 delegates from six different countries, which was thought of as a great success because these were delegates of bigger groups from Russia, from Germany, from France. But even then, this is not that large. And before the Second World War, Zionism stays sort of obscure political idea that young radical Jews would subscribe to.
Apart from the fact that Herzl had sufficient financial resources to travel the world preaching his doctrines, thanks to his family and supporters, his charismatic, overwhelming personality was also the key to his large number of followers.
Herzl thought of himself as a political leader, even before he was a political leader. Never mind political leader, always thought of himself as a leader, period, which might stem from his mother pampering him with praise and coming from a successful family of wealth. But when his writings didn't gain him prominence, cultural prominence, he turned to another field where he could gain access to influence. And I'm not saying that Herzl was this Machiavellian figure who only looked out for power and influence. But it is a strong part of the Herzlian identity that there is this belief that he is destined to do great things. Only a person who strongly believes of his potential as a great leader could come up with a world-changing idea of the Jews gaining access to Palestine and this whole idea of the Jewish state.
The Holocaust contributed greatly to the achievement of the goal of Zionism. For several years, Herzl was going around the world trying to negotiate with world leaders in order to get access to Palestine. Maybe these unsuccessful attempts are the reason why Zionism waned in popularity in later times and became virtually non-existent as a political force by the beginning of the Second World War. But during the horrors of the Holocaust, this idea of Jews having their own state and being protected comes up again, and Herzl's idea has a resurgence. And then they could even get major political leaders to align with them, mostly because of their guilt felt by the horrors of the Holocaust. After the Second World War, in 1947, European and American public opinion and the individual states, with the exception of the United Kingdom, agreed on a Jewish state in Palestine. Herzl's legacy and memory is so strong and dominant in Israel that you can find not only his picture in every government office and institution, but the cult that has sprung up around his figure is present in the lives of Israelis from a very young age. If you went to kindergarten in Israel, you have most likely met and played with a Herzl doll and read about Herzl's extraordinary life in storybooks.